This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross. Law & Order, one of the longest-running series on TV, returned to TV this week on NBC, back to the time slot where it first premiered in 1990. Our next guest today is Dick Wolfe, creator of Law & Order and all its various franchises, including the still-running Law & Order Criminal Intent and Law & Order Special Victims Unit. Earlier in his career, Wolfe worked as a writer and or producer on such shows as Hill Street Blues, Miami Vice, and New York Undercover. Terry spoke with Dick Wolfe in 2003. But before we get to the interview, here's a sample clip taken from season 5 of the original Law & Order. The stars that season were Jerry Orbach and Chris Noth. They'd just come upon a man who had collapsed in the lobby of a posh Manhattan hotel of what they presumed, at first, were natural causes.
I thought he was drunk. We get all kinds wandering in here at this hour of the morning.
Maybe this one wandered in from your bar.
No, the bar is over there. He was coming from upstairs. Detective, how much longer is this going to take? Our guests are quite sensitive to this kind of thing.
Yeah, especially this guest. In his pocket. No ID, no wallet.
Any way to find out what room this belongs to?
No, they're untraceable. A security precaution.
I'm sure he appreciated it. Hey, next time there's a heart attack at 3 in the morning, why don't you call it into the 2-0?
I don't know what we got here. Before he keeled over, did you notice if he was holding his left arm?
No, he just looked drunk.
Was he slurring his words?
No, he was trying to speak.
Could be a stroke.
Yeah, how about a stroke of lead? Look at that.
Jeez. Blink once and you'd miss it.
Must be a small caliber. There's no exit wound.
Maybe a 22.
That'll do it. Ping pong's off his vitals, all the bleeding's internal.
Great. I liked him better when he had a heart attack.
One of the things that's pretty consistent in the writing, stylistically and content-wise, is that you don't find out much about the private lives of the detectives or the prosecutors. It's really driven by the story. Why did you make that decision?
The wonderful thing about procedurals is that it does away with the necessity for soap opera. In other words, when you're not dealing with the personal lives of the characters, you can concentrate on the story. You can tell a complete story with a beginning, middle, and an end. And it's quite efficient in terms of dealing with complicated issues, dealing with moral issues that, we've been saying the same thing for years, that the first half is a murder mystery and the second half is a moral mystery. So it's how do you keep those elements unpolluted by the sex lives of the characters are going home with them. They're workplace shows. And I think that there is a fascination of just watching people at work without those sideline distractions of their personal lives.
And, you know, another thing the shows have in common, you've tried to do away with, you know, the establishing shots. You say you don't really want to spend a lot of time with the characters, kind of getting from one scene to another, getting in and out of rooms. What are some of those things that you wanted to kind of streamline or just take out altogether and just keep the action going?
That's you've annotated several of them already. That I think that one of the realities is that there is enough information in either side of the show to make a completely satisfying hour cop show or a completely satisfying hour legal show. The fact that you have to give what in many cases is twice as much information in the same 43 minutes that you have in a character-driven show, to tell this much story, you don't have time to go home with the characters. I mean, the pace of the show, the average hour show has about 26 scenes per episode. Law & Order usually has between 40 and 42. So that's a huge differential in terms of the pacing and in terms of the way scenes are structured on the shows.
One of the things you have to do every week is cast a dead body.
And,
you know, actors like to come in and show you their stuff. How do you audition to be dead?
It's a very, very complex process because everybody wants to be the dead body. It's the only thing that I'm constantly getting requests to be from people that, you know, can I be the dead body? And it's highly sought after because you can't be cut out. So it's a great gig for extras.
Yeah, but you can't. You don't get to emote or anything.
No, but, you know, then you also, nobody can comment on your bad acting either.
Law and Order, one of the things it's known for is that a lot of the shows are, you know, the kind of, quote, rip from the headlines type of shows where they're based on actual news stories.
No, they're not based on there. We steal the headline, but not the body copy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I mean, if you actually have knowledge of any of the cases that as they unroll, you go, oh, that's that case. It never is. The headline, the top of mind awareness is what we're after. And then, you know, the reality is most real life murders take a very predictable road to fruition. That they, you know, most murders are solved within the first 48 hours and most people are convicted. That does not give you the twists and turns that make for an entertaining hour of television.
Now, I know you worked in advertising before you started working in television. You worked doing advertising mostly for Procter & Gamble products like Crest and Scope.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Would we know any of the campaigns you did for Crest or Scope? Did you write any of the jingles
or
slogans?
Scope. Scope fights bad breath without giving you medicine breath. There's one of the undying.
Oh, medicine breath. That was yours.
Yeah, and one of my favorites was... you can't beat Crest for fighting cavities, which is a wonderfully neutral statement, that it's a parity statement as opposed to a competitive advantage, that there can be 400 other toothpastes that are as good, but nothing's better than Crest. And that lasted a long time.
That's great. No one can sue you over that one.
Yes, sir, you can use whatever toothpaste you want, but none of them are any better. And then National Airlines, which was... probably the most controversial campaign that I was ever involved with, and I'm sure you're too young to remember, but it outraged.
Oh, try me.
Try me? Fly me. I'm Cheryl. Fly me. Remember National Airlines?
Well, that was, Fly Me was yours?
Yeah, that's a long time ago. That's over 30 years ago now.
Oh, that was controversial because of, for feminist reasons.
Yes, it was.
Right.
That was the
It sounded like a sexual
feminism.
Innuendo.
Well, it was.
So much of advertising was then. I mean, of advertising still is, but it was all more innuendo than overt.
It was very, very direct innuendo because they had a very specific goal in mind, that National Airlines had by far the highest percentage of business travelers in the early 70s going to Florida, and the reason was the stewardesses. That was the age of mini skirts that were so short that the stewardesses were not allowed to bend over in the cabin. They had to sort of do a semi-curtsy when they were serving people. And National really wanted a campaign directed at businessmen about the stewardesses. So it may have lacked some subtlety, but it did get talked about.
Have you become, I don't know if there's a word for this, somebody who hangs out at crime scenes? And
That's a level of... I guess buffed them. I've spent an inordinate amount of time with cops, but not really at that many crime scenes in the last 15 or 18 years. I used to go to them a lot when I was starting out writing this stuff.
How would you go? Did you have a police band radio?
No, I had a couple of homicide cops in L.A., and one of the aims was to see one of every kind of crime or one of every kind of murder, you know, that it was an open call if there was a shooting, stabbing, garroting, something that was a little unique. Stan White or his partner would call, and we'd go out and see it. And I think the strangest crime scene I ever went to was on Super Bowl Sunday about 15 years ago, and I got a call from Stanley to meet him in Bell, which is one of the worst sections of L.A., and I walked in, and it was this apartment that was in kind of a motel complex. And there were three uniformed cops sitting on the sofa in this apartment watching the Super Bowl. And I was saying, God, this doesn't look like a crime scene. And then I walked 2 feet further in, and there was a body inside the closet, upside down, wrapped up in telephone cord, with his eyes open, watching the game along with the cops. It was... these three cops sitting there, absolutely no interest in this body 2 feet away from them, but they were into the game.
I'm sure you'd seen a lot of crime in movies and television and read a lot of books with crime. were there some things that just really astonished you about how real murder looks?
Yeah, it's a lot bloodier than we showed on television.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the one of the things that probably, unfortunately, most people who tell you that have gone to a crime scene is they're... It's surprising how much blood there is in a human body. It's much worse than we've ever shown on the show.
And when you actually saw these real murders, was there anything that surprised you about the faces, the expressions on the victims' faces?
Well, the guy in the closet looked quite surprised.
Mm-hmm.
But he was upside down, so I don't know, you know, what lividity has to do with that. But there are,
right.
I would say that people kind of, say, if there was one expression, it wasn't pain. It was kind of like, what happened? It's, you know, surprise.
Right.
I don't think people usually expect to get shot. It's also one of the things that most cops will tell you that the most common thing is never ask to be shot because... A lot of drunken altercations and a lot of street confrontations, somebody pulls a gun and somebody else says, oh, yeah, you're so tough, go ahead and shoot. Okay. And homicide cops will tell you the number of people, the number of killers that they've arrested to say, well, he told me to shoot him.
That's really interesting because
yeah.
In a lot of crime movies and TV shows, somebody who is kind of tough and challenging and sometimes the hero himself or herself will say, yeah, go ahead and shoot me. And then the person gets really weak and because the hero is wise enough to know that the person doesn't have the courage to do it. And that's
one homicide detective told me it is the single most common line in homicides.
Wow.
Go ahead and shoot.
That's really, really interesting. And that makes me think, too, about the kind of wise guy language that a lot of people use in TV shows and in movies. Smart aleck stuff, where somebody's mm-hmm. got a gun on you and you're quipping.
Oh, yeah. No,
bad idea in real life?
It's not a smart thing to do. You know, the best solution to anybody having a, you know, if you ever have a gun pointed at you, give them whatever they ask for immediately.
Including some respect?
I'd be polite.
Right, right. How does this affect the dialogue that you write and the dialogue that you edit for Law & Order?
Well, you see, it's not really much of a problem because by the time the show starts, they're already dead.
Yeah, but there's still other, you know, the cops, the detectives are hunting for the killer, and they sometimes get in tough situations, and friends of the victim sometimes get in tough situations, too.
Yeah, I think it's much more, I mean, the hallmark of, and Jerry is the one who said this, that Law & Order is kind
Jerry
of like
Orbach.
Jerry Orbach is kind of like a Catholic high mass, that it's a rite, that the audience knows what's going to happen. Not in terms of the storytelling, but that there is a rhythm to the show. And I'd say one of the rhythms that is now part and parcel of it is Jerry's kind of mordantly acerbic comment at the end of the teaser, which has become part of just sort of the Law & Order mantra, that there is a setup line and then Jerry gets to get the last line in the teaser, which invariably is kind of a... either acerbic, sarcastic, or insightful comment about the stupidity of murder.
Well, we're out of time, regretfully. I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Dick Wolf, speaking to Terry Gross in 2003. Law & Order returned this week to the NBC lineup.